Turn in your Bibles to Genesis chapter 1, if you would, please. We're going to continue the series we started last week on beginnings. And we're going to talk about, for the next couple of weeks, we're going to be talking about beginnings and all of the things that that represents. And Genesis, what a great place to start then, the very beginning. How many here have ever seen the movie The Blind Side? Anybody seen it? Good. It's the real life story of a man named Michael Oher, you know, and he was a really big kid who grew up on the streets in Memphis. And by God's grace, he was adopted by a very wonderful couple, a family that was very different from his own family. And this lady that adopted him, the wife of the couple that adopted him, was a real mama bear. And she really watched out for him. If you remember the movie, and you probably know the story, so I'll just kind of give you the Reader's Digest abbreviated version of it. His high school football coach didn't really see any use for him because he was a big kid, but he was really too passive to be aggressive enough to be effective playing football. But Mama Bear saw something in him that the coach didn't see. And the minute that the coach put him on the blind side of the quarterback to protect him, that is when he flourished. That is when he just came into his own, and this led to a stellar career in the NFL. Now, what would have happened if she hadn't seen him for what he really was? You know, he probably would have listened to his high school coach and believed that he was a terrible football player. Now imagine the story if he never discovered his true identity. See, the reality is we all have a similar story. Somewhere along the line, some well-meaning coach or teacher or parent or classmate misidentified our identity and we believed them. Some of you right now had a mama bear or another angel in your life who saw your true identity and helped you discover it as well. For others, perhaps you feel your heart is racing right now because you sense in your very gut that you're not living up to your potential. You know you were meant for more, but the mirage in the mirror is keeping you from it. The voice in your head is telling you, you're not good enough. This can't be you. Who do you think you are to dream big dreams? But what if you were destined for more? What if you were fashioned for greatness, created for a higher purpose? What if? This is one of the oldest and most perpetual questions of humankind. Who am I? Last week we talked about, why am I here? So we're talking about the whys and the whos so far. We'll come back next week and the next 2 weeks to see what else we cover. But you see, that's a real core question. And it's a core question of every philosophy and every religion because it is the relentless question of every individual. Hopefully you turn to Genesis chapter 1, literally the very beginning of the Bible. And we're going to be at the very first chapter. Last week we talked about in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Then skip down to verse 26, and we're going to talk about this today. Genesis 1:26 says, then God said, and I have to honestly admit, I never really dissected it this way before, ever. He said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. There are three words or three phrases in this passage that I really want to help you to come to an understanding because they are the key to understanding your identity and your God-given purpose. Are you ready? Let's go. Number one, the phrase, let us. Let us. Okay, Genesis 1:26 is one of the most curious and most important verses in the Bible. Notice how it began, let us, okay? The God of the Bible from the very beginning is described as a community. We're talking a lot about community these days. But the God of the Bible is described as a community. God is we, not me. We, of course, know this as the Trinity. But, you know, we will never fully understand the mechanics of it, but the basic idea is simple and is accessible. There was a single God with multiple persons, or the ancient Greek fathers called them different manifestations, okay? In some mysterious way, our God speaks of himself as us. Of course, the Bible will later reveal that as that us as the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. But all of that is above our pay grade to fully understand it, okay? Someday we will understand it because 1 Corinthians 13 says, you know, for now we see in part, but then we will know. When we see him, we will know. I believe that when we stand in the presence of Jesus on that day, all the questions you ever had all down through your life, you wondered about this, you wondered how did this happen, I believe that when we stand in the presence of God, we will know instantly all those things, all those mysteries. So the knowing on this side of heaven is above our pay grade, so to speak, okay? But it's critical for us to embrace this for a number of reasons. And the one reason that I really want to focus on right now is the communal nature of God. If you're new to church, or perhaps it's been a very long time since you've been in a church, this will actually make some sense to you. I know it's a crazy idea that such an insider concept would make sense to everyone, whether you're in church or not in church. But we all sense the breakdown of community in our society. It was actually studied in a masterfully written book called Bowling Alone by Robert Putnam. Bowling, I love that title, Bowling Alone. And the book examines the reasons and the consequences of the breakdown of community in America. That's why so many young people are returning to some kind of tribalism to find identity in new groups, you know? Ah, yeah, you're in my tribe, man. Whatever, you know. But you know what? It all started with God. It all started with him. God himself is community, and he made us to be communion and to be communal. We're not merely social, you know, craving community. We are actualized in community. And as I said earlier, by nature, we are more we than me. You know, particularly in the Western world, we have focused on the me part of it, you know? Even if you ask someone to introduce themselves, you know, listen to, I'll use myself as an example. Hi, I'm John. I'm a pastor. I like to golf, and I like to bike, and I like to eat. And I have a wife, and I have 3 kids, and I have 10 grandkids. And on and on and on it goes, with all beginning with the word I. God created us in and for community. So our identity, not just our preference, is communal. Not just our preference. Who am I? Well, I'm a son, I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm a friend, I'm a partner, I'm a teammate, I'm a grandfather. Without my relationships, I don't have authentic identity. Without my relationships, I don't have authentic identity. That's why so many young people who run away from home to find themselves get more lost in the process. That's why those who rise to the top of their organizations feel isolated and alone. That's why those who achieve fame become insulated by bodyguards, and managers experience emotional and social crisis, one after another. We were made for the community by the divine community. And when we lose community, we lose our identity. We've been talking a lot lately about connect groups. These past few months, we've been talking about connect groups. And we desire to build community by developing our connect groups. And we're in the process of developing those right now. And you will be hearing more about those as we go on. So you wonder why we keep reminding you of our small groups, our connect groups. Why do we do that in our church? Why? It's because God made you to find yourself in a group. That's the way he made you. And your best self is when you know and when you are known. So our desire is for you to have a full and biblical identity among a group of people who share your goals and aspirations to love God and love people. That's the core of why we exist as a church, to love God and love people. Okay, the next two words we're going to look at here. Number two, our image. Let us make man in our image. This leads to another life-altering truth from Genesis 1:26, and it's embedded in the phrase, our image. What does it mean when the Bible says that we were made in the image of God? Granted, it is a mystery beyond our understanding, yet I want to explore one facet of what this might mean. Clearly, it does not mean that physically we look like God, since God is spirit, and they that worship him must worship in spirit and in truth. So we need to look at characteristics that we share with God. Okay? So that much is clear. Now let's try to be even more specific, shall we? God has some characteristics that are unique to him. All right? Omnipotence. We don't have all power. Okay? God does. We don't. No other being does besides God. Okay? Omniscience. We don't know everything. Turn to the person next to you and say, we don't know everything. Don't say you don't know everything. Say, we don't know everything. See, we don't. We can't know everything. But God does. God knows everything. What about omnipresence? We can't be everywhere. Even mothers and grandmothers can't be everywhere. Even though sometimes we think they are. Just like we think they have eyes in the back of their heads, right? But we can't be everywhere. These are specific to God alone. Omnipotence, omniscience, and omnipresence. Now, there are characteristics of animals, some of which we do share. You know, animals and humans were born to feel fear. All right? We both experience hunger and cold, and we feel connected to like species sometimes. You say, yeah, I know that they're part of my species, but I don't really like them. You know, we could go on and on and on, but I think you get the idea, okay? What I'm most interested in here are those characteristics that we as humans share with God. Perhaps that's the best definition of the image of God. So what would some of those characteristics be? Well, let me give you a list of a few, okay? The first one is artistic creativity, okay? We share that. Only humans create art, and we do it all the time. You know, there's nowhere you go where you aren't surrounded with some kind of art. We put paintings on our walls. We add splashes of color in our homes. We plant things around our property, and we dress with current fashions. And for you teens, your parents have a broader definition of current than you do. Okay. You know, we barely get out of bed before we turn on music. And we seldom go to bed without enjoying some kind of show on TV. Or having something on. Our cars and our offices and our homes and our churches are all decorated with human representations of beauty. And we create sanctuaries of art called museums. And in those places, we're expected to be silent and dress appropriately. Kind of sounds like church, doesn't it? Art seems to be sacred for the human species. The next one I'd like to talk about is that word called time. What is the first thing you look at in the morning? The clock. Well, maybe it wakes you up. I don't set an alarm. I just wake up at 4:55 every morning. But I looked, confirmed that it truly is 4:55. First thing I do, I don't know. I've asked the Lord that many times. I can stay up till midnight, 4:55. The clock is the first thing we look at when we get up in the morning. Why is it so important to us from the moment we get up? You know, we have watches, we have clocks, we have phones. Maybe you have sundials. I don't know. Why? Because we dissect our days, we count them on calendars, and we memorialize them with birthdays and anniversaries, and we are insatiably connected to time. What other animal does that? None. No kangaroo puts events on his calendar. All right? No wildebeest wears a watch. Sorry to be the breaker of this news to you today. You know, even... it's not something they wear, though. They just instinctively know it. And I still wonder about that one, too. But anyway, even if they had the mental capacity, I doubt that they would do it. Why is that? Because they don't have the same obsession with planning and time management and future plans that we do. It's just not in their DNA. However, it's hardwired into ours. God uses time, even though he is above and beyond time. He uses it, and he puts those characteristics in us. And though we live in the moment, we also have eternity in our hearts. We bring both the past forward and the future near in this present. So time is one of those things that we share, a characteristic we share with God. How about communal eating? There are often feeding frenzies, you know, with fish and lions and or birds or stuff like that, but nothing like the meals that we share as humans, you know? No animal sets a time for a meal with the family. No chipmunk says, okay, at 5 o'clock, you will be home today to eat with us. We're going to eat as a family. Doggone it. None of them use special china to decorate the table and during holiday celebrations, and they don't decorate the table with candles and linens and things like that. This is actually more significant than you might imagine. All throughout the Bible, there are lots of meals, and every one of them is spiritually significant. And what is the very first thing we will do when we get to the New Jerusalem? We'll eat. We'll be at the marriage supper of the Lamb. It's a meal. I think that's why one of the few universal features of every Christian church all throughout history has been the Lord's Supper. Let's look at one more characteristic, then we'll move on. Language. God uses language to communicate his love to us. No other animal has that advantage. While certain, you know, apes have been taught sign language, you know, and some aquatic animals can make certain noises that they call advanced scientific calls, you know. There is no animal that writes poetry. There is no bird that truly sing. They call or some mimic sounds that they hear. But that is a far cry from creating a melody or telling a story or composing a play or rhyming words in a beautiful poem or writing a novel. We alone share this characteristic with God. Now, you take these four together, And something surfaces that is truly beautiful, and that is this. And you may hate this point. But each of these four characteristics are mundane. Let me explain. They are part of our everyday micro moments. They come to us in the bedroom or in the boardroom, in a coffee shop or in a funeral home or a sporting event or a romantic dinner. They are everywhere always. In other words, we are most like God in our most mundane moments. We are created for divine community. You see, it is, in short, our created nature. I think I went too far, didn't I? Yeah. It is, in short, our creative nature, our created nature. Every moment of every day, in the smallest ways, we are most like God. And I'll say it again, we are most like God in the most mundane moments. Now, let's say a few final things from Genesis 1:26. And the next one is the word rule. So write down the word rule on that third line there. God designed us to rule over this creation. Now, that is domination. That is dominion, not domination. Okay? Say dominion.
Dominion.
Not domination.
Okay.
We are called to dominate creation. We are not called to dominate creation. We are called to steward it. Domination? We're called to have dominion over it. Not to dominate, to foster it, to improve it, to make it better. We are stewards. We're not end users, okay? We're not the last ones. God designed the human species, the pinnacle of his creation, to make something of it. He put us on this planet to make something of it. It's not merely that we protect what God made. We continue creation by implementing in community the characteristic that God has given to us. Here's an incredible thought. God created the heavens and the earth. He then charged us to make a world out of the stuff that he put at our disposal and under our care. You see, it is our divine right and responsibility to make a better world. How many times have we just kind of sat back and I remember when I was a kid, there was some sort of campaign in the city that I grew up in to do something, and the campaign slogan was, "Don't let George do it all." And what that meant was, be in community with one another. You know, don't let your neighbor do it all. Don't let them do it all. You do your part as well. It's our divine right and responsibility to make a better world, to do what we can do to make this a better place. You know, and we have. I mean, we see cities that have been built and music and art and education and technology and transportation. All of these things have increased and become better and better and better. These are all works of our heart, hands, and mind that extend the creation of God to become a world reflective of his good nature. Obviously, our sin nature has wasted amazing resources on frivolous things. That's obvious. Without sin, none of this would be necessary. This is not a criticism of any occupation or anything like that. But imagine a world where all of our efforts are for positive communal development. When we come together as a community to make our community of faith a better place, to make our community here a better place. You know, how is it that the world will know that we're Christians? By what? By our love. And that means that we're doing things together in unity as a community. That's how they'll know. Imagine what it would be like if we could get together and do all of that. As Christians, we have an incredible opportunity, especially through our local church, to model a community that is devoted to pure compassion, social responsibility, love, and other godly issues. Those are things we need to be conscious of and aware of and doing something about. You know, even the evil that's all around us can be turned into an opportunity for us to shine the pure light of God and the pure love of God to a community that is reeling from the effects of brokenness. It is our responsibility as people of God to curb the natural appetite for revenge, to get even. It is our responsibility to work on racism, to help reduce it. It is our responsibility to love the outsider and the marginalized. It is our responsibility to minimize the need for prisons and hospitals and politics. I mean, and police. Politics, too. Police. That was a faux pas, but I think it was probably good. Some of our missions giving that you give every month goes to help support those ministering in men's and women's and youth prisons. As Derek said a little while ago when he was talking about the giving record, we want to be accountable to you, and our books are open for you to check out anytime you want to do that, to see where our money goes. We give you an account of it once a year at our business meeting, which will come up in April the 19th. It's right in there. Is that right? It's coming up in a couple of months, and we'll give you the whole year. You can see where this came. You can ask any question you want to ask. So, how are you going to take this today, what we've talked about? What are you going to take with you as you go today? What difference will you make this week in the world that you live in? Remember, you're most like God in the mundane. So this doesn't have to be a colossal effort, but it has to be an effort. It just needs to be you living life with the nature of God coming out of you. The characteristics that God put in you need to be coming out of you, need to be flowing out of you in your day-to-day walk, in your day-to-day life. So here's my challenge to you. I would like you to identify one of these four characteristics of God: time, language, art, and meals. Something that you could use this week to create community. Whether it's in your family or at work or at school or a team or a connect group or whatever that would bring a bit of heaven to earth. Someplace where you could get together with some people and allow the nature of God to flow out of you to them. And I challenge you, don't race past this challenge. Don't overlook this challenge. Choose a time, calendar it. Choose a time and place and people where you are going to exercise part of your divine nature for communal improvement.